The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I've rescued another interview from my archives. This time, we're reaching back to October 3rd, 1984, for my telephone interview with legendary singer and Sinatra contemporary, Jerry Vale. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Vale.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Bob Andelman with the St. Pete Times.
Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. Just watching the ball game.
Oh, yeah. Who's winning?
Cubs are winning about 4-0 right now.
Wow.
To the double. Yeah.
They're really on a rampage. That's 13-0 yesterday.
Sorry, you know, they're a good team. They deserve it.
But I have a feeling you're from California now, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, well, I was kind of rooting maybe for the Padres to win because I go home on the 13th. I might have been able to watch go to the World Series there, you know.
Oh.
One, but it doesn't look like it.
No, they're starting to put a little distance between themselves and the Padres.
Yeah, it's 4-1 now, Chicago beating San Diego.
Hmm. Well, maybe we'll wind up with a Chicago-Detroit series.
That's well, it'll be okay. I like Chicago, too. I've been a fan of theirs for a long time.
You're really a long-time big baseball fan.
I'm really a baseball fan more than anything, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's as good a... Oh, that's as good a place to start as anyway, because I know some of your work has been tied up with baseball over the years. Before I forget, can I get permission from you to use a tape recorder for the interview?
To use what?
A tape recorder. I just want to... Okay.
Sure.
Just a little FCC requirement.
Yeah.
I understand that your involvement with baseball began... your public involvement began when you were asked to do the national anthem for the Yankees?
Yeah. Hold on just one second. Let me lower this TV a little.
Sure.
You say my public involvement with baseball?
Yeah, I got the impression from a lot that I've read that people became more aware of your interest in baseball when you first recorded the national anthem for the Yankees. Maybe I'm wrong.
That's probably true, but I've been a baseball fan long before that. I was a baseball fan when I was a little boy.
Oh, cool.
My father used to take me to see the Yankees. I'm from the Bronx.
Right. I'm from...
And, I was into baseball quite a few years before I did the national anthem.
How
I recorded it for the Yankees because a fellow named Burke, not Howard Burke, but not Michael Burke, but Howard Burke.
Howard Burke.
The fellow who was publicity man, you know, public relations for the Yankees. I met him at a theater in New York one night while I was watching a Broadway show. He told me that they needed a new national anthem. I said, well, I'm going to be recording soon, so I'll do one for you if you'd like.
Hmm.
And I did, and I gave it to the Yankees. Recorded it with a big 40-piece orchestra and about 8 girl singers, and I gave it to them as a gift.
Huh.
And then whenever other teams came in to play the Yankees, they heard my version, and they liked it and requested it, so... I got a lot of requests. What I did was I had copies made for every team in both leagues.
Wow.
And would you believe that the Yankees are the only ones that don't play it anymore?
Is that right?
Well, I mean, other teams play it on occasion, you know, but the Yankees use Robert Merrill.
Oh.
It's okay. I like Robert Merrill.
Yeah, New York Opera.
But since Steinbrenner took over, I guess he decided that Robert Merrill was either a better version or... maybe he's a personal friend of his or whatever, but that's okay, you know.
Or more currently associated with New York, maybe.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm a little disappointed in that, but that's the way the ball bounces, I guess.
That's a nice pun.
Yeah.
Do you remember what year you recorded that for the Yanks?
Gosh, it had to be in the early 60s, I would say. Probably I would say probably 64, 5, somewhere around there.
Mm. Are you still? Do you still have opportunities to perform a national anthem at the big?
I just did for the Dodgers this year.
Did you?
I did it live, yeah.
Opening day?
No, it was about a week after the opening.
Huh.
That actually was April 14th.
I'll be. Who are you following now? I only guess the Padres because they're closer to home, but are you still a big Yankee fan? Are you following the California
teams? I'm not a Yankee fan anymore. Not since Steinbrenner took over. I'll tell you why. Not so much because of Steinbrenner. I probably shouldn't say that, to be fair, because George has he's done a lot for baseball. You know, he brought the Yankees a pennant there after they had been down to the dumps for a while. He brought them back. But a lot of the guys that I knew with the Yankees are no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys like Greg Nettles, who's now with San Diego, and Rich Gossage, and a lot of the guys, you know, that were playing at that time. And I moved out to California. I moved out to actually the West Coast 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the guys that I knew are no longer with the Yankees. So I root for the Dodgers.
Oh, of course. When you grew up, the Dodgers were New York.
Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not such a foreign team for you, I suppose. Something just ran through my. When you were, of course, growing up in the Bronx, you're not living in New York now. But have you been back? Have you been back there much?
Well, yeah.
It must be like a whole other world.
Oh, it's a different world. You know, the strangest thing I must tell you is, when I lived in the Bronx, I lived in North Bronx near Mount Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seemed quite normal, you know. But after I left there and I went back, for some reason the streets and the houses seemed so small.
Mm.
I don't know how to explain that. Maybe it's because I've been to Vegas, been to the big hotels, been to big homes, you know, with people of means, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Not that I'm saying nothing against my old neighborhood. I love it, and I love the people in it. But just for some reason, everything seemed a lot smaller.
Hmm. Was your name? I know your background is Italian. Was the neighborhood an Italian neighborhood?
Yeah,
it was.
Sure, there were most of them were Italian.
Hmm.
We had a lot of Jewish friends too.
Yeah. Was there ever a time when we were talking about baseball? Was there ever a time when you thought you wanted to be a ball player?
Yeah, when I was growing up, I thought I'd like to be a ball player. I used to play for a team in Mount Vernon, you know, forget the name, but it's been so long. actually, it was in Mount Vernon. It was Standard Athletic Club.
Huh.
And I played for them, played second base, a little bit, you know, but I was too small a guy, and I'm just 5'7".
Hmm.
And I never really had the talent.
Hmm.
I just like baseball, but I always wanted to sing too.
Right. So there was no. I'm just wondering if there was any other career thoughts that ran through your mind.
Well, at one time I was going to work with my father. My father was an engineer and I was an oiler.
Hmm.
On a steam shovel, you know. We worked the. We used to dig excavations for different areas. We dug the excavations out and for the. Sewage plant out in Oyster Bay, Long Island.
Hmm.
We've done a lot of that. You know, I worked with my father for quite a while. I thought maybe I might like to do that, but then I got a break singing. So thank God I made the right decision.
And the break, I guess, was the talent show?
Well, the biggest break I got was when I was working in Yonkers. I was working at a place called the Enchanted Room.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a guy there. Remember Guy Mitchell, singer? Well, you might be too young for that.
Guy Mitchell
was the guy who recorded My Heart Cries for You.
I recognize the song.
He's had a lot of million-seller records. I met him while I was appearing there. He was doing a one-nighter. And I met him, and we became friendly, and he arranged for me to take an audition for Mitch Miller at Columbia Records.
Hmm.
And that's how I got my first real big break. You know, I've been working a few clubs after that, but nothing exceptional with that. I was just doing, a few things that were incidental to
Do you, here's the difficult one. Do you remember in terms of years when that was? When you met Mitchell?
That was about 1950.
Hmm. That was the 50s were a period of a lot of male romantic singers.
Yeah, well, that's really what they were. I mean, in 1950 and 51, it was just before rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at that point, we had no idea that rock and roll or rhythm and blues or whatever was going to be as popular as it was. I remember when I signed with Columbia Records, I made my first record in 1952. And even at that point, the male singer, the ballad singer, love songs was still the most popular thing at that time. Then maybe a year or two later is when rock and roll started to happen.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever, at that time, I mean, was there ever a feeling of a crossroad type of thing, like I can go on being this romantic singer that appeals to these screaming women, or I could try the rock and roll since it's young and.
No, I couldn't try rock and roll because I never understood it.
Really?
I never could sing it.
Huh.
See, I'm not a musician. I don't write my own songs. I don't
right.
play piano.
Right.
So I'm from the old school. I'm a singer of the type like a Como or Tony Bennett or a Sinatra, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not able to do the other things, so. But I've been.
I was just thinking.
I have to admit that I've been pretty lucky. I mean, here in 1984, and I'm still working, still doing business.
Oh, sure.
Still earning good money. I mean, so I would say that I had a pretty good career. I've been doing this for 35 years.
Oh, sure. No, the only thing I was saying, and it's nothing at all bad meant by it. I was just thinking that.
I'm just making a point. That's all.
Because of that. At that particular period, a young man the same age as the people who were heading in that direction, I just wonder if you had even considered it at the time.
I had no desire to do that, though. I really was never into that, you know.
Hmm.
I mean, I like it. I you know, there are some things in rock and roll that I like very much. I like some of the people that are in it. I like some of the songs that are written. I think there's some great talents, and I admire them for the success that they've had.
Are there?
I really personally had no desire to do it.
Are there young singers, young male singers coming up that are performing in the same mode that you are in? Is there going to be another generation?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't know of any. I can't think of one right now.
Hmm.
I mean, I can't think of one singer coming up that would do the kind of songs that I'm doing or. Or things like I've done the Italian American albums, I've done the great standards. I don't know if anybody, I don't know if a male singer that's doing that today, you know, a young male singer that is.
Does it worry you that those songs may disappear with your generation of singers? They
it
just
worries
might...
me that that those songs are not going to be performed. But more important that as we get older, I'm more concerned about myself being around.
Yeah, well, that was a kind of an awkward question for me to ask. You know,
I really feel that it's a shame that some of those songs are not going to be done like they should. You know, actually, when you talk about it, you know, today, if you walk up to a 15-year-old and say, you know, what about Bing Crosby? You know, I guarantee you that. I bet half of them or more would say they don't even know who he was.
Mm, I'm sure you're right.
You know, and that's a crime because Bing Crosby was an American institution.
Mm-hmm.
Legend. And I would venture to say that there are those that don't know Tony Bennett or Jerry Vale.
Mm.
And it's no fault of theirs, you know, but time goes on and things change. But fortunately, we've built a pretty good foundation, guys like myself and Tony and Jack Jones, you know, we still have a certain amount of fans that like to listen to what we do, come see us.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been more fortunate than most of those guys because I've done the ethnic thing.
True.
Or the Italian-American albums.
I guess you are to Italian-American music what Bobby Vinton is to poetry.
I would say yes. I would say, oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'd definitely say that. Bobby Vinton is a very dear friend of mine. In fact, he sang the national anthem today. At the playoff game.
Oh, did he?
Yes, he did.
Oh, we've got radios around the room, but I haven't been able to get near one.
And Bobby's a very nice guy. I know his family well. Yankees. Probably one of my good friends.
Oh.
So I would say probably Jerry Vale is to Italian American people what Bobby Fenton is to Polish American people.
Very good. Are there songs that you are performing in your act now that have been with you for the better part of your career? Is there anything
yes.
that stayed?
I do songs like Al Di La,
mm-hmm.
which I introduced, by the way. A lot of people are not aware of that. A lot of people think that Emilio Pedicoli did it in the movie Rome Adventure, but I must tell you that I did it about 2 or 3 years before that.
Let's see.
I introduced that. I do songs like Mala Femina, which is also a big Italian-American song. Then, of course, I do tunes like... I'm doing some songs from La Caja Fol.
Hmm.
I do that. I do songs from Chorus Line. And so I try to keep a little bit up to date, you know, with some of the better songs. Some of the songs... I shouldn't say better... Let me say, some of the songs that are better for my voice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are great songs written by these youngsters today, and I'm happy for them.
Have the considerations of your voice changed over the years as to what you can sing and what you can't?
Not really, no. I can do the same thing, practically the same thing that I've done all my career.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I may have to take something I have toned lower. Because as you get older, your voice drops, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am still able to do the kind of things that I did then.
Huh.
Very few exceptions.
That's real good. What is the status of your recording career right now?
Right now, I'm not recording very much. I've done a couple of things for some movies. I sang in a movie called Fingers. With Harvey Keitel, and I did. I sang in a movie called Easy Money with Rodney Dangerfield.
Rodney Dangerfield, right?
But as far as recording albums or singles or anything like that, I'm not doing much of that at all, and not many people are.
Hmm.
Tony Bennett's not recording. Victor Mone is not recording. Even Engelbert Humperdinck, as far as I know, is not recording.
Hmm.
So it's a shame that we're not, but the way the record business is, they just don't want that right now.
What was the last record that you put out?
As far as with Columbia,
I
put out a record called Now Is Forever on Buddha Records.
I'm sorry, Buddha?
Buddha, yeah.
Okay.
But most of my recording career was done with Columbia Records.
That's what I thought, yeah.
I did 48 albums with them.
Wow.
A lot of singles. And to this day, thank God, they're still being played on radio.
Hmm.
In fact, I would say I get more play today than I ever did.
Well, there's probably a lot more stations and a lot more specialized type of things.
Yeah, we have stations like the Music of Your Life stations that are playing old records, you know. I say old. I don't mean old. I'm talking about records from the 60s and 70s.
Right. I know my mom. I don't know. Maybe this is unrelated, but my mom listens to a station. She's in New Jersey, and she listens to a station that every Saturday night runs about a four-hour set of Sinatra records. And I imagine that would be the type of station that's probably playing a lot of your music.
Right. Yeah, that's the kind of station.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I had a photographer I work with here. I told her I'd be speaking with you, and she wanted to know if you, and I hope she got the title right, if you were still singing a song called Two Purple Shadows.
Oh, that was my first hit record.
Is that right?
Right. I did that recording about 1954 or 5, somewhere around there. That was the first big selling record that I had. It was Smash It in Pittsburgh at first. And it spread around, and I did a couple hundred thousand, maybe 300,000 or 400,000.
Wow.
That was the first hit record I had. And once in a while I do, when I get a special request for it, I do it, you know.
Hmm.
But I don't really include it in the show.
Well, that's a nice coincidence. That was your first big
hit. Yeah, first hit record I had, yeah.
I'm not personally familiar with the song. Can you? It sounds like such an unusual title.
Well, Two Purple Shadows on the Snow shone from her window to the street below, and I was so surprised, I stood there hypnotized. I never realized I loved her so.
Huh.
And the last line of the song is kind of a, well, you see, it says two purple shadows on, and as I tore up two tickets for a show, they turned to two purple shadows on the snow.
Oh. Yeah, that was.
I was going to take a girl out, and he was going to pick her up, evidently, and had the two tickets in his hand for a show, and then he looked up and saw two purple shadows on the snow, shone from her window, meaning she was with someone else.
Hmm.
You know, so that's probably.
Do you remember your excitement when that became a hit, when it started selling? And you know,
my what?
Excitement. When that happened?
Oh, yeah, very excited. Well, the first time I had a record that was selling, I got a call from Columbia Records. They said, you better go to Pittsburgh right away. I said, what's going on? I said, you got a hit record. And I thought it was The Other Side. The Other Side was a song from Kismet. It's called And This Is My Beloved. I said, well, it looks like And This Is My Beloved is taking off. I said, oh, no, it's The Other Side. I did, and this is my beloved with Percy Faith with a big 40-piece orchestra. And I did Purple Shadows with four musicians.
Huh.
And I thought it was just going to be like an amp, you know, just to have another side. And that was a song that became a hit.
Wow. Well, I'm glad she remembered that.
Well, you get a chance to listen to it. I think you'll like it.
Well, she's got a copy of it. I'm going
to... Well, listen to it if you get a chance, because I think you'll like it. It's a very good song. And I think I sang it well. I think it's a kind of a song that, even today, the quality of it is fantastic.
Mm.
It's in stereo. And you'll never know that it wasn't made yesterday, really.
Wow. What kind of band are you traveling with now? How many pieces?
I'm working here at the, it'll be open Friday. I'm going to have 21 pieces.
Mm.
I got violins, eight violins, three trumpets, three trombones, five saxes, rhythm section, guitar, you know, a big orchestra.
My God, what a payroll.
They can afford it down here. When you're in Atlantic City or Las Vegas, they certainly can afford to do those kind of things.
And now, how many of that will come with you to Clearwater next week?
We'll have about 18 down in Clearwater.
18?
Yeah. We'll have violins. We'll have a little bit of everything.
Still a big group. That's good.
Yeah, it'll be nice.
People appreciate that, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to coming down here, by the way.
I'm sure you've played down here before.
I don't know if I played in Clearwater. I've been in Florida many times.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is a brand new hall. You'll like
this.
Sure,
I've heard it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's an incredible...
I understand that it seats about 2,200.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there's just about a couple hundred seats that are still available.
Yeah, you know, I heard that.
Yeah, that looks very good.
I'm sure they'll go. The acoustics in there will absolutely amaze you. It's really astonishing. I got one last question for you. Let's make that two. One was that I noticed in something I read that you are involved with a couple of charities.
Yes.
Suicide prevention and the child abuse and mental health. And I just wondered how you happened to get involved with those particular ones, if there was any.
Well, the first one, as far as child abuse is concerned, I was not too aware of child abuse. I knew about it like everybody else, you know, like most people. I had heard about it, and I did what everybody else did. I said, oh, that's a shame, you know, it's terrible. And then one day, Christina Crawford, who wrote Mommy Dearest,
mm-hmm.
my wife became friendly with her when we moved to California. And she took my wife and I to a facility in El Monte, California, where they took these children that were abused, that were thrown out of their homes or taken away from their parents. And I was so moved by that. My wife and I both were so moved by what we saw. I mean, I don't even want to... Well, I can tell you things like a little baby, a year and a half old with one arm.
Mm.
You know, the mother had burned the arm, and the arm had to be removed.
Oh, God.
Another woman took three of her children and put them in boiling water. Scalded them. Alive and burned.
practically beyond recognition. A 16-year-old thrown out of a car going 50 miles an hour. I mean, those kind of things, you know. I just couldn't believe that people could treat their children that badly.
Hmm.
So my wife and I made a vow that we would do everything we could possibly do to help these children, so that maybe even if we could stop one of them from being hurt or tortured like that, we'd be doing something good in life. But I believe that when you're successful and you're healthy, that you've got to give something back to life.
Hmm.
So that's how we got involved with that.
I see. Okay, now the last question that I was going to ask before was, if you were able to choose it yourself, what single recording of yours would you like to be remembered for?
Would I like to be remembered for?
Yeah.
Well, I made so many records, but I probably would have to say that the one that I enjoyed doing the most was a song called You Don't Know Me, which I recorded in 1957, which eventually became a hit for Ray Charles and a fellow named Lenny Welch. I recorded that song. I was the first one to do it in a pop field. It was written by Eddie Arnold and Cindy Walker. I recorded that after I had heard it on a country western station. I think I did one of the best jobs of singing I've ever done on the record for that particular song. And I don't know whether a lot of people remember it. Some probably do. I'd like to be remembered for having done that song.
It's very good.
On country records.
It's very good. Well, Mr. Vail, I appreciate your time this afternoon.
Well, it's my pleasure.
I enjoyed chatting with you. So,
yeah.
Even if you're
seeing you down there at the affair.
I hope so.
If you do, will you come back and say hello?
Certainly. It was nice talking to a guy. Even if he was born in the Bronx, I don't know. I'm born in Brooklyn myself.
Well, my wife is from Brooklyn, so we're even.
Okay.
Okay.
Very
well,
good.
Stay well.
All right. Enjoy the ball game.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
The preceding presentation was brought to you by The Realm Network.